Yeah, the last four chapters of Shmuel are kind of one story, but divided up into two vantage points. Shaul's vantage point and David's vantage point over the same battle. The same experience of Shaul's battle against the Plishtim. David, to do a quick review, David is in Gat, spending the last year plus kind of living amongst the Plishtim, fighting ostensibly, on the face of it, fighting wars on behalf of the Plishtim, really fighting enemies that would be enemies of Israel, but pretending that he's fighting Israel in order to side with the Plishtim, or at least gain the ability to stay, to gain the loyalty of Achish Melech Gat. So all of that is what's happening in the world of David. In the meantime, the Plishtim have now moved, beginning of Perachav Chet, to a final campaign against Shaul. They've marched their forces northward, so they've now allied with all the Canaanites along the coast, and they've reached all the way up to back to Har Goboa or to Emek Yisrael, and that puts an existential threat on and pressure on Shaul. And so Shaul's forces have also gathered together. There was an initial stage described in Perek Chavtet. We talked about the fact that they are these prakim are out of order, but there was an initial campaign in Afek, and then they moved their forces further forward into Emek Yisrael, as you see at the end of Perek Chavtet. Vayashkem David uva neshav lalecha baboka leshuv al eretz plishtim uflishtim alu Yisrael. So at that point, from effect, the plishtim went further north to Emek Yisrael, and that's where Perek Chavchet, which is our Perek, begins, with the forces of the plishtim encamped at Emek Yisrael, Bahar Gaboa, and Shaul looks out at this enormous army and fears, more of a sort of an existential fear. You can see in Perachav Hey Pasuk Dalid, Vayikavtsu Plishtim Vayavo Vayachanu B'Shunem Vayikvot Shaul Et Kol Yisrael Vayachanu B'Gilboa. This is the final campaign for Shaul against the Plishtim in Emek Yisrael, launching point of Har Gilboa. Vayar Shaul Machane Plishtim Vayira Vayechrad Libo Meod. Perachavchet. Perachavchet. Shaul saw the Plishtim, was afraid. Vayar Shaul, he was afraid. Or he saw. Vayar Shaul Machane Plishtim Vayira. It's a play on words, right? He saw, he was afraid. But in Hebrew, you can play with the words vayar and vayira, because it's the same letters, just different vowels, and you get a very powerful, that's the power of Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, is that the Tanakh often plays with verbs that are spelt, the consonants of which are spelt the same way, the vowels are different. When you start to play with them, you end up with very powerful connections. So Pasuk Hey is a good example. Vayar Shaul ad machane plishtim vayira. Shaul saw the camp of the Plishtim. He was afraid. And that fear is a theme that runs through Shaul's latter part of Shaul's life, and we're going to talk about that fear at length over the next two shiurim. Vayar Shaul et machane plishtim vayira vayecherad libo meod. Vayecherad libo is more than just afraid. To tremble. Charada is a trembling. It's almost like a debilitating fear. Echarad libo, it's not just that he's afraid and therefore needs to gather more forces or needs to do something stronger or greater or do something more significant because the enemy is stronger than he anticipated. That's fear. Echarad libo is like a debilitating fear, fright that overwhelms a person.
How old is he now?
We don't know. We don't know. I mean, Shaul is the end of it. At the end of his life, he's going to die in battle. How old is Shaul when he died?
Well, just approximately, because isn't that, you know, as you age, you do fear.
I don't think. I mean, David HaMelech already is one of the oldest kings, and he lives to the age of 70, so I don't know that Shaul is... We don't know the age because we don't know the chronology. But I'm guessing it's 50s. I guess. I mean, Yonatan is the same age as David, more or less. When they first met, David was about 17, Yonatan was about that age. So this, the whole story of David and Shaul is... takes place over several chapters, but it's not that long. So I'm gonna guess somewhere in it.
You know, they might ask you that on a Tanakh question.
They might. They will.
We'll ask
the beauty of the Chidon. They will ask my son. They will not ask me. Number one and number two. The beauty of the Chidon is that they only ask questions that are in the text. Nothing that is open to interpretation. In fact, I actually had that question with you, with Yechiel and I were discussing. There's a question that was asked on the Chidon that I was very surprised at because it's a huge controversy. It's the pasuk in beginning of Sefer Malachim, and this is total parenthetical aside since you mentioned it, so this is nothing to do with this year. But there's a pasuk in the beginning of Malachim Bet, story of Elisha, where there's a description of a great famine in the Shemon, and Elisha is walking, and there's this lady who calls out to him and asks him for food, and Elisha's response, sorry, not Elisha, the king of Israel, Melech Yisrael, is walking on the ramparts, and he sees this woman, and the woman cries out to him, what are you going to do for me? I can't do nothing to eat. And the king, in a moment of cynicism, responds and says, how do you want me to feed you? From the wine or from the wheat? What would you like me to provide you? And then turns and says, go find me Elisha, his head rolls today. Right? To blame the Navi. It's very easy, always blame the Navi. But the name of the king is not identified. So it's in a section of stories in Sefer Malachim that are all related to, or that start with the story of the king of Yoram ben Achav. Whoever Yoram ben Achav is, not Arisha today, but it's a series of stories in Perkei Elisha that describe that king, and then you have this story. But in that story, he's only ever identified as Melech Yisrael. So most of the Mefarshim would say that king is Yehoram, because that's who the previous chapter is about. But there are contemporary commentaries. Certainly the Beis Medrash of Herzog and of Yoav ben Nun and of Medan and all the contemporary commentaries and scholars all believe that it's a much later story. It's one of these stories that appears earlier in the text, but it's much later. So they identify it with somebody else, Yehoachaz ben Yehu. So they ask the question on the Chidon: who was it who said, how will I save you? I'm in a Goran, I'm in a Yekev. And the answer that was given was Yoram Melech Moav, Yoram ben Achav. So I asked Yechiel, I said, that is controversial because normally they're very rigid about asking questions that are just text and that are not open to interpretation. There's only one answer that you can give.
That's interpretation.
And that's interpretive because it doesn't say, it just says Melech Yisrael. So he said to me that they probably would have accepted either answer.
Oh, wow.
Or what is more likely to be the case is they would have accepted the answer of Melech Yisrael. Because that's how he's identified in the parable. Who said that? Melech Yisrael. Or, so any one of those answers. So that's
the answer.
The answer the boy gave on at the Chidon was Yehoram. Because that's sort of the main mainstream. But it is interesting that once in a while they throw in these. There was a few questions like that. If you watch the Chidon carefully, there were a few interesting questions that
some of it. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah, you kind of have to fast. Okay, that's my aside.
You should give a share on the Chidon.
I give a share every week on the Chidon.
I'll let
Yechiel do it. All right.
So I just have to tell you something, but you can turn that off also.
Waiting. Okay, we're back in business. Vayar Shaul machane plishtim vayira vayacharad libo maod. And here, just to do a quick review, because we read the story through, I really want to focus on sort of the takeaway of it. But we're just going to go through it again just to refresh our memories. Vayishal Shaul ba'Hashem b'lo anau Hashem gam b'chalamot gam b'urim gam b'nevi'im. Shaul is seeking, searching, trying to figure out what's going to be. This fear of the Plishtim and this army and this campaign has rattled him significantly, so he's searching, and his biggest fear is the fact that there's a silence from all of his sources related to God's intent and instruction. So he sought God. God did not answer him through the dreams, through the Urim V'Tumim, through the Nevi'im. In this case, Shmuel is not around, but there are other Nevi'im, disciples of Shmuel, and in the end, none of them responded to him. Vayomer Shaul Avadav Bakshuli Eshet Balatov V'Chai Lev Ed V'Shaba. So he said, okay, so Leidu Bera, as they say, no choice. He decided to go to the local medium of Balat Ov and see who would be able to give him some kind of insight, or in this case, to bring back the soul, the spirit of Shmuel. Earlier in the parak, we skipped those two psukim, but in Pasuk Gimel, it said that Shaul had, at an earlier time in his life, Hesir ha'avot v'tayudonim me'aretz. And Shaul had, in an earlier part of his life, already campaigned according to the Torah's requirement of removing all of the Ov and Yidoni from the land. And so, when he turns to Eshet, to the Balat Ov, that is not only his own hypocrisy coming to bear, but also the challenge that he's already removed them, they no longer exist, and so he has to find one that missed the purge, as they say. So they find somebody in Endor who fits the bill. Shaul disguised himself, because of course if Shaul was knocking on the door of the Balat Ov, the last time Shaul went knocking on the door of the Ov, it was to execute them all, she's not going to respond to him. Ushne anashim imo, he took two people with him. This whole discussion is who those two people are. In the Medrash, they're identified by name, but for our purposes now it doesn't matter. Vayavo el ha'isha laila vayomer kosmina ba'ov v'halili et asher oma elayich. Kosmina, do your thing, do your magic, whatever it is, and bring me whoever I tell you. V'tomer ha'isha elav v'nei ata yadat et asher asa Shaul asher echlit et avot v'et ha'yidoni min ha'aretz v'lam ata min ha'kesh b'nafshi la'miteni. You're asking me to do something which is a capital offense. Shaul took an oath by God, by the living God, that he would not harm her, or that no harm would befall her for this. So who do you want me to bring? Bring me Shmuel. So again, the yira and liot and lira, right? The fear, the two different roots, but the play is very powerful, right? So she saw Shmuel, vatizak b'kol gadol. She cried out with a great trembling. Vatomer ha'ishal Shaul lamer lemor lamer imitani v'yata Shaul. Why have you deceived me? You are Shaul. Right? Virtue of the fact that she sees Shmuel, immediately it is a giveaway to the fact that this that he is next to her is Shaul HaMelech. We spent some time talking about how it is that the image of Shmuel conveyed to her that Shaul's identity, and we talked about the kera, we talked about the cloak, and the tear in the cloak is a kind of a giveaway. Vayomer la HaMelech al tiri. Again, there's that play. She saw, king says, don't be afraid. Kimara ita, al tiri kimara ita. Don't be afraid, what did you see? In the English, you don't get the alliteration that you get in the Hebrew. Al ti'i ki ma ra'ita, v'tomer na yishal Sha'ul, Elohim ra'iti yoli min ha'aretz. This Elohim referring to man of stature, noble, powerful, coming up from the ground. V'yomer lamataro, describe him. V'tomer ish zakeno levu otem il. He's an old man, but of course, old man here is relative because Sha'ul was also died at 52, so you know, age here is relative. V'hu otem mi'il, and that mi'il is the key piece of his description. And we suggested the possibility that the mi'il still carries the tear that represented the message to Sha'ul. V'yeda Sha'ul kishmuel hu v'yikod apayim arza v'yishtach. V'yomer Shmuel el Sha'ul, and here the conversation between Shmuel and Sha'ul begins. V'yomer Shmuel el Sha'ul, lama yirgaztani la'alot oti? Why have you disturbed me? Why have you brought me back? Lama la'giz is to anger, but in a sense of an annoyance. Why have you annoyed me to conjure me to bring me back? V'yomer Sha'ul, tzar li me'od. Tzar li me'od is a very interesting phrase because it literally means I am.
Here it says distressed.
Distressed, in tzara. Tzara v'tzuka. Tzara is trouble or distress. We say in the Mishaberach, "Makol tzara v'tzuka." All trouble and distress. David HaMelech makes a similar statement at the end of Sefer Shmuel, Tzar li me'od. Tzar li me'od uflishtim nilchamim bi. I'm distressed because the plishtim are attacking me. Ve'elohim sar me'alai ve'lo anani od. And God, or the Spirit of God, or the Shekhinah, or some kind of communication, or the courage that comes from divine inspiration, has been removed from me, and not answering me. Gam b'yad ha'neviim, gam b'chalamot. Ve'ekra'a l'cha lo di'eni ma'aseh. So I turn to you, tell me what to do. It's a fascinating observation, because here Sha'ul's entire life has been characterized by what relationship with the Navi?
He avoided it.
Right, this kind of denial. I'm in charge, don't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. It's not conscious, but subconscious. Meaning Shmuel gave him one instruction at the very beginning, by Gilgal, to wait for him, not start the campaign without him. He was late. Sha'ul said, no, I'm going to start the campaign without you, because I can't wait. By Mechamet Amalek, Sha'ul gave him an instruction. Sha'ul did his own thing, changed the terms of the engagement. Why? Because he felt it was more effective. Here at the end of his life, and it was precisely that lack of willingness to take direction from the Navi that ultimately was his undoing. Here at the end of his life, he's feeling like he doesn't have a direction, so who does he turn to? The Navi. Right, so there's on the one hand, there's an element of cynicism there. Right? Now you come to me.
He actually turned to the soothsayer.
Right, in order to get access to Shmuel. Shmuel is one who says, "Lami gastani la lototin." He says, "I have no one to turn to except Melodieni Maaseh." So it's both ironic, cynical. Right? Here at the end of his life, he turns to Shmuel. But on the other hand, you could look at it from a positive side, which is, yeah, there's a certain element of he's looking for that direction, and so who does he turn to? Right, he turns to Hashem. Didn't get an answer. The Umvertum didn't get an answer. The Nevi'im didn't get an answer. So he went to the one Navi who he knew had a relationship with. At least Yishmuel will tell me what to do. Vayomer Shmuel, v'lama tish'aleni? Why are you asking me? V'Hashem sar mi'alecha v'hi arecha. God has gone away from you. Vahi arecha. Now, arecha is a word that the Mefarshim struggle with in terms of understanding what it means. Some suggest it means vahi re'echa, play on the word, or reverse the word, right? That the Shekhinah has moved from you and gone to somebody else. Who Re'echa, let's move to your Re'a, Hatov Mimecha, which was the Nevuah back in Perek Tevav. How do they translate Arecha?
Enemy.
To your enemy. meaning the Shechina has become your enemy, meaning that's the other possibility, which is that the Shechina has become not your ally, but your but an antagonist to you. Right? Opposed, opposite you, instead of on your side, because you have abandoned God. Vayas Hashem lo kasher diber biyadi, vayikra Hashem et mamlecha miyadecha, vayitna le'recha le'David. God has done exactly what he told you he would do. He's taken the kingdom away from you and given it to your rea, your other, your friend, meaning David. And here again, you have the arecha and the reecha play between the two words. Kasher lo shamata b'kol Hashem, v'lo asita chanon apo ba'amalek. All of this in the aftermath of you not listening to God and not doing what he asked to do and destroying Amalek. That's why God has done all of this today. God will give you and your people over to the plishtim. The punishment here is collective, national, because ultimately the failure of the king will always reflect in the situation of the people. Umachar ata uvanecha imi. Tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Gam et machane Yisrael yiten Hashem biad plishtim. And the machane Israel will be defeated by the plishtim. That's the message. That's it. That's Shmuel's message to Shaul. And it's pretty tough. Now, if you were Shaul, put yourselves into Shaul's shoes for a moment. What would you do now?
If I was scared before.
If I was scared before, I'd be frightened out of my wits now, right? Machar atah uvanecha imi. Tomorrow afternoon, by tomorrow, you and your sons are going to be with me. What does it mean, with me?
You're
going to
die.
Right? Where is Shaul? Where is Shmuel? Right now he's in the living room of the soothsayer, but where is he otherwise?
He's dead.
Right?
He's gone.
Vayimeher Shaul, vayipol milokomato arza. And there is a description. His full height. Remember, what was the most important, what was the most characterizing description of Shaul HaMelech?
Tall,
mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol adam. So vayipo melo komato arza. His full height fell to the ground. Right, talk about the circle of Shaul having come full circle. Right, the height, which was his defining characteristic, which is why he was chosen. Remember when we looked at the story of Goliath, we talked about why was it necessary to choose a king who was so tall. His height was the characteristic chosen by God for one reason, primarily because his primary mission mandate was to be able to fight against Goliath. Right? And it turns out he was too afraid to fight against Goliath, so David, little David, as they say in the song, right, went to fight Goliath. But that was ultimately what Shaul was, Mishich Movamal, Gavo Mikol Adam. And here, Meloko Mato's full height, Arza, collapsed to the ground.
That proves how tough.
How
afraid he really was.
How afraid he really was. Vayira me'od midivrei Shmuel. And he was terribly frightened by Shmuel's words. Gam koach lo ayabo. And sometimes fear is so overwhelming that it's debilitating. And now you can't move. You can't eat. You can't function. Ki lo achal lechem kol hayom v'chol halayla. He hadn't eaten all day. King doesn't eat. I assume it's only for one of two reasons. Either he doesn't eat because he's in the middle of the campaign, he's got time for food when you're fighting a battle, or he's not eating. Right? It could be a fast day. We don't know. Right? It could be that he's not eating because it's terrible calamity and tragedy and a threat to Israel. You don't want to be sitting and having lunch while everybody's in danger. Or you're not eating because you're so debilitated by the fear that it's overwhelming that you just can't eat. That is a very
It's quite understandable.
Very understandable, correct. It's a very powerful description of that kind of depression and fear. And this is for somebody whose defining characteristic over the last 10 prakim has been this kind of emotional failure of paranoia and depression and mood swings, right? This is since his fear of David has, he's been fighting with this melancholy and all kinds of emotional ailments.
Don't you think this act of his coming to do all of this is really from in his innermost asking for forgiveness?
Oh, so that's very interesting. Why do you think that? Why do you say that? That's so interesting, because we're going to see that there is a line in the Medrash that takes that approach. But it's so extraordinary, because I would not have thought in the Pshat. Why do you think that?
I don't know. The feeling that I got when he came to this person, and he's trying like the last straw. What do I do? What do I do to try to save myself? Maybe his innermost feelings were, I know that I haven't done all these right things, and maybe if I go and do this and ask for forgiveness, maybe I'll be forgiven.
So it's very interesting that you say that, because I've heard a whole page of Midrashic sources that take all sides to this issue of how to assess Shaul's last stand, if you will. And there is a certain kav, there's a certain approach in a host of Midrashim that say exactly that, that take exactly that approach, that this was, in a sense, his tshuva. And that tshuva is reflected in several aspects of it, including his willingness to accept the decree. Right? Kabbalat Tadin is in itself an aspect of tshuva. We're jumping in the gun a little bit because we haven't gotten to the end of the story, but I think there is a great deal of truth to what you're suggesting, although it's, I would say, truth beneath the surface.
But because of his height, to me, I think about the impact of him falling the way he fell like that. You know, like, you're talking, we've been describing how tall he is, how his stature is such a big thing, and to think that he fell.
Crumbled is more the term I would use.
Yeah.
Crumbled.
Like, think about it. Like, I keep visualizing
just
him
literally
doing that.
Just crumbled into a heap on the ground.
That's what I keep thinking.
That's right. And that's the other side of the coin. So these are the two sides. And I when I wrote my notes, I entitled it at the top, Shaul Gibor or Pachdan. Right? So, you know, is he a hero or a coward? All right.
Well, is there any possibility that he was worried about the people too and what was going to happen to them, or was it just for him, for his own fears?
I would assume he's worried about the people. I mean, his loyalty is to the people. In a certain perverted way, but yeah, this is no question. He is the king of Israel. But Tavoi Shaul Shaul, so after he crumbles, can you imagine, you're the Balatov, you've just brought up this image of Shmuel, this is the message he's conveyed, your king, and you know he's your king, right, has crumbled to the ground, and the army of Israel is waiting in Har Gomoa, which is not far from Endor, to go to war against the Plishtim.
Wow.
She comes, she sees that he has been frightened. Again, you have that play. Vatomer elav, hinei shema shivchatcha bekolecha, v'asim nafshi bechapi, v'shmat dvarecha shedibarta elai. Ata shmana, gam ata bekol shivchatecha. Listen, she says to him, I took my life in my hands, I risked my life, and I did what you asked me to do. So now it's time for you to listen to me. She says to the king. Let me do that again. Hine, shema shivchatcha b'kolecha v'asim nafshi b'chapi. I listened to your voice, your assert, right? And I took my life in my hands, and I did what you asked me to do. V'shmat dverecha, shedibarta elai, I brought Shmuel, etc. So now it's time for you to listen to my voice.
Pretty
chutzpah. I'm going to give you a plate of bread. Eat. It's like, I got this vision of this, like, you'll forgive me, like the Jewish grandmother coming to the grandson and saying, you haven't eaten all day, you look famished, eat something already, Nebuchadnezzar. Why? You should have enough strength to go back to the journey. What are you going to walk out of here in a crumbled heap? Eat something, my king. Vayima'en. He refused. Vayomer lo achal. I won't eat. Vayifritzu bo avadav v'gam ha'isha. So his servants, right, his two people are with him, and the woman, the baratov, they begged him, they cajoled him, they nudged him. Vayishma l'kolam. Finally, he agreed. So he ate. Vayakom ha'aretz, got up from the ground. Vayeshev alamita. He went and he sat back down on the couch where they eat. V'la'isha egel marbek b'bayit. The woman had a fat cow in the house, a calf in the house. Why she had the, I don't know.
That's fine.
We have a guinea pig. Right? They had a cow. I don't know. But that's what they. That's how you used to prepare food. Right? You had a selection of animals, and you would slaughter it and prepare it, and that's how you prepared food. Look what happened by Abraham, by when he wanted to prepare food for the Malachim. Right? He ran to the tent, told Sarah, "Shech the animal, prepare the food. Let's get it right."
Now we
know the joke about when you go to a restaurant and it's taking them an hour to prepare your to bring you, right? So you say, well, you wanted a fresh, you got a fresh cow. Right? This is exactly what happened. She went and she offered it or slaughtered it. Vatikach kemach. She took some flour, vatalo, she kneaded the dough. He's sitting there waiting while she's slaughtering and kneading the dough. Vatofeu matzot and baking matzah. Why matzah and not lechem?
It rises
fast.
Because right, she's got to get it fast and fast, right? She doesn't have time to wait for it to bake to rise. She's got to get it done fast, so she bring a matzah. Right. Slaughter the cow, bring a matzah. Vatagesh lifnei Shaul, lifnei avada vayochelu. She brought it before Shaul and before his servants. They ate, vayakumu vayochu v'layla. They got up. And they left that night, having eaten and satiated the bellies and gotten themselves ready for battle. And since I already mentioned the beginning of Parshat Vayera, it's not so far-fetched. If you look at the beginning of Parshat Vayera, that's exactly the same description, which only heightens the question.
Vayera.
Beginning of Parshat Vayera, which is... Breishit Perek.
Now, if we had memorized the chapter, if we had memorized it.
Yirchet.
It's page 17. For those who haven't memorized the chapters.
What did you say?
17.
It's way back when.
So when Avraham is talking to the Malachim, he doesn't want to let him go. So he says, "Pasuk Dalad, Yukachna ma'at mayim v'rachotzur aglechem, yishanu tachat ha'etz, v'kha pat lechem v'sadu libchem." Let me give you a little pat lechem, and you'll be satiated, and then you can go on your way. Ki akene v'artem alav dechem. Pasuk Dalad, Yimeher Avraham o'al asara. Remember, he's looking for lechem, right? Prepare 3 sa'a of flour. Lushi vashi siyugot. Knead it and make bread or cookies or whatever. Ve'ela bakar atz Avraham, and ran to the pen wherever the animals were. Ve'ikach ben bakar rach v'tov. Ve'iteret anah v'yayim mehel asot otov. And he handed the animal to his nar and he said, okay, go prepare it. And then after everything was said and done and they finished eating or talking or describing or whatever it is, so it says that they got up to leave. So this description of how you, if you want to feed your guests, what do? You go and prepare fresh shechita, fresh animals, and a little bit of dough, and you prepare pat lechem, only in the case of So Avraham doesn't say matzot, it says patlechem, but when the malachim come to Lot, there it says that he fed the matzot. There's a whole medrash that it was Lel Seder, that it was Pesach night, because Lot fed the matzot. Avraham fed them lushi v'siugot, Lot, the same night, they come to Lot, and Lot fed the matzot. Whereas here, the Balatov feeds him, says he'll give him patlechem, and then in the end gives him matzot, because of course lechem takes longer to prepare than does the shechita of an animal and the preparation of a nice steak.
Wait, I'm confused. How could it be Pesach if it's way before Yitziat Mitzrayim? I'm so confused.
Conceptually, Chazal did it a lot with various events in okay. town and the Sefer Bereishit. Midrashically, that's.
I'm a little off.
You're not so trying to compare the soothsayer to what happened before, right?
Are
you comparing them?
I am comparing them.
No,
because
I know.
What I'm,
in the words you're comparing them.
Correct.
Here's a soothsayer, and here's Sarah. I mean,
Avraham and Sarah, right. Correct. So what's the comparison? So why would, in other words, any time you have two stories in Tanakh, this we've done many times, any time you have two stories in Tanakh that use the same language and present almost similar scenarios, it's usually to highlight both parallels and differences, but usually connects two pieces of the story and brings out something that we wouldn't have otherwise have seen. And in the case of Sha'ol, Avraham and Sarah's case, when Avraham runs out to greet the Malachim, right, that's a very positive description of Hachmas Sarachim and food and preparation out of Avraham's Gevura and his strength, and he's just had Bismillah and his loyalty to God, etc. It's like the mirror. Or other end of the spectrum from Sha'ul, who's crumpled on the floor in fear, debilitating fear from the message that he just got from Shmuel that says, tomorrow you're going to be in the grave. And the soothsayer says to him, eat something, Lincoln, because you're the king of Israel and you can't sit here crumpled like a little animal. Right? So very different stories. But on the other hand, if look out of my way to describe her effort to provide him food in the language similar to that of Abba, I think that there is, at least on some level, an element of a positive description that he sits and he eats from this Chnasas Archim of the Balatov. So there's an element of, let's call it a redemption, let's say, a little bit of his fear. Or mitigating a little bit of that fear to the point where he is willing to eat. So what's the takeaway of this parak?
Tells us what's going to happen.
Well, that's usually that's true. What's the takeaway? So what I want to do with this parak is the takeaway of this story and sort of our final unit of on this parak before we move on to the next part of the story. So I want to look at the takeaway from the vantage point of Sha'ul. From the vantage point of Sha'ul, what is the text trying to convey to us in terms of the message about Sha'ul himself? Because remember, the story flips between Sha'ul and David. We have a story about Sha'ul's last campaign where he will fall in battle against the Plishtim. There are two stories that are taking place at the same time. We are described, those stories are described to us in two different chapters, but they're happening simultaneously. Sha'ul's fear in engaging the Plishtim in his preparation for that campaign. David and his moral challenge with Achish Melech Gat that will ultimately lead him to join Achish and then retreat from that battle. So we'll see that in the next paragraph. So what's the takeaway of this part of the story with Sha'ul? What's the Navi trying to leave me with a sense of, particularly with regards to Sha'ul himself, to describe this story, Sha'ul in this story? How would you see this?
How far he's come and the life itself and what he ends up doing and bringing it to a full circle where he's going to die tomorrow.
Okay, there's an element, and we highlighted a little bit as we went through it, a highlight of all of the different sins that Sha'ul has committed,
right,
and a kind of recall of those moments. Amalek is mentioned, the Me'il is mentioned,
right.
The lack of God answering him with the Urim V'Tumim because of his crimes against the Urim V'Tumim, which goes back to the story of Mechemet Michmas, as well as the execution of the Kohanim of Nov, which is sort of his worst crime, if you will, and ultimately is the fear that has crippled Shaul in his ability to function.
To synopsis.
You see him as a tragic figure. I mean, he started at such high level. We had such, I don't know, we thought so many good things would happen with him, and he fell.
Right.
He's human in certain ways.
Yeah.
But isn't it sort of, didn't he come sort of come back to himself at that point when he ate?
Right, so there's sort of this end of the story where after he crumples in fear and he refuses to eat, so his refusal to eat is connected to his fear. The fact that he eats,
he's going to go do his job now.
Maybe, right?
You mean the fear is
so. It's an interesting story. Like this, it's so intensely focused on the debilitating fear that overwhelms him, and how many times does it describe in this parak that fear? And yet, at the end, so he sits down and he eats, and he goes out, and we don't know where he goes. It doesn't say. Because the story gets interrupted with the next two prakim of back to David. We're back to the story of David. Afek, and then he's Emek Yisrael. The rest of the Perek Chotet is all about David. Perek Lamed is all about David. The continuation of this Perek is beginning of Perek Lamed Aleph. So to see where it picks up on, we need to flip the pages a little bit and look at the first couple of psukim of Perek Lamed Aleph. Uflishtim nilchamim b'Yisrael v'yanusu anshei Yisrael mipnei plishtim v'yiplu chalalim b'har gabah. The battle started and plishtim are fighting against Israel, and Israel, as predicted by Shmuel in that message, are fleeing from the plishtim, meaning the battle is not going in the favor of Israel but in favor of the Plishtim. People are dying on Har Gabah. Vayidbaku plishtim et Shaul v'et banav. The plishtim caught Shaul and his sons. Vayaku plishtim et Yonatan v'et Avinadav v'et Malkishua b'nei Shaul. And in that moment, they smote, or they attacked, or they hit with the arrow Shaul's three sons, Avinadav, Yonatan, Avinadav, and Malkishua.
How tragic.
Vatichbad milchama al Shaul. The milchama became more intense. Vayimtzau hamorim anashim bakashet. The sharpshooters with the arrows found their mark. Vayachal meod mehamorim. The people were afraid because of these sharpshooters. Yireh bakeshet, just to shoot an arrow. Vayomer Shaul lunasek kelav. So Shaul turns to his assistant, his armor bearer. Shlof charbecha v'dakreniva. Take out your sword and pierce me through. Pen yavo ha'arelima ele udkaruni. Lest these Arelim come and they kill me. Vit alaluvi, and they will mock me. V'lo'ava nasekalav, but nasekalav refused to do it. Do you understand what I'm reading?
Yes.
Paragraph 1 Aleph? V'lo'ava nasekalav. He didn't want to do it. I'm going to take your sword and kill the Melech. Ki yarei ma'od. He was afraid. So Shaul took his sword and he fell on it. And then the Nasekilav saw that Shaul had died. So he also fell on his sword. Vayamot Shaul ushloshet banav v'Nasekilav gam kol anashim bayamahu yachtav. So on that day, we lost Shaul, his sons, and his Nasekilav, who we never identified by name, all died at that moment. Vayiru anshei Yisrael asher be'eva ha'emek v'asher be'eva ha'yarden ki nasu anshei Yisrael v'chimetu Shaul v'anav. When all of Israel on the other side of Emek Yisrael and on the other side of the Yarden, when all of Israel saw or heard that Shaul and his sons had died, v'yazvu et ha'arim v'yanusu v'yavo plishtim v'yishu behem. So they retreated, and the plishtim sat and settled into the Israelite cities that they had retreated from.
How did all this happen so quickly? I mean, it couldn't have been that. I mean, it wasn't like people had, I mean, that they all saw.
So quickly. I mean, there's no frame of reference of time in these things. I have no idea how long these campaigns take.
So he referred to the plishtim as Arelim?
Yes, that's not new. We've seen that before.
I'm saying that.
David, back in Shoftim, Shimshon, Ein mivnot Yisrael leisha shata lech lekachat isha mivnot ha'arelim ha'elu. Vayavo mimocharat, vayavo plishtim lefashet et ha'chalalim. The next day the plishtim came to remove the spoils of war from the bodies, right? To undress the bodies. And they found amongst the dead Shaul and his three sons. Means they didn't even know who they speared. They were just shooting arrows. They didn't know necessarily that they killed the king of Israel. Because when you're shooting an arrow from a distance, you don't know where it lands. But they've discovered that they found Shaul and his three sons. Vayichnetu et rosho. So they cut off his head. Vayivshitu et kelav, and they removed all of his armor. Vayishalchu be'eretz plishtim saviv, and they sent it as a message to all of the cities in the area of the plishtim around. Levaser beit atzabem et am, to celebrate. Look what they accomplished. They finally killed the king of Israel, and here is proof: his armor and his head. They put the armor on display in their temple in Beit Ashtoret. And the body they threw in, over the wall in Beit Shan. The people of Yavesh Gilad heard what they had done to the body of Shaul. Where did Yavesh Gilad come to the story? We haven't heard from Yavesh Gilad since
a while. It's a long time.
Long time. When was the last time we heard from Yavesh Gilad? First of all, where is Yavesh Gilad?
Isn't it far from here?
You need our maps.
Yeah.
You need our maps.
Yeah.
So there's two giveaways. Number one, the word Gilad. The word Gilad is a reference to an area of land on which side of the Jordan? Let's start with that. East.
Yeah.
East. Reuven and Gad Menashe.
Right.
Okay, Reuven and Gad Menashe split the land east of the Jordan. The lower part of it is the area of Sichon and Og, the area of Ammon and Moab. The northern part of it, which goes from the opposite Emek Beit Shan and Emek Yisrael, on the east side of the Jordan, all the way up into the Golan Heights, that whole area is referred to as the Eretz HaGilad. It was called Eretz HaGilad. It was named in Chumash. Where was it named? Yaakov and Lavan. And Yaakov is coming back from the house of Lavan, and Lavan chases after him. So before he gets back to the area of Israel, and that Nachal on the other side of where Yaakov had crossed off over his children, and then he remained alone, and he fought with a man. Nachal was called Nachal Yabok. It's on the east side of the Yarden. Lavan comes running after him, and Lavan says to him, let's make a treaty. I'll stay in my territory, you stay in your territory. They take a heap of stones, they turn it into a testimony of the border between them. That heap of stones is referred to as Yagar Sahduta V'Yakov Karalo Gal Ed. Gal ha, 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 even as, gal ha, matzeva azot, that this matzeva was a heap of stones, was an ed, a testimony to the treaty between them. Hence the name Gilad. Yavesh Gilad is a city in the area of the Gilad. So it's on the east side of the Yarden. That's a very far way from Emek Yisrael. So why the people of Yavesh Gilad, who heard about what was done to the body of Shaul, Vayakumu kol ish chayil, so their warriors came, Vayachu kol halayla, they took a whole night journey in order to get to the battleground, Vayikhu et gviat Shaul vet gviat bena mechomat Beit Shan, they took the body of Shaul and his sons from the wall of Beit Shan where the Plishtim had thrown it, and they brought it to Yavesh to give them one of those days was referred to was a respectful burial of kings, which was in those days it was still common to burn the bodies as a sign of respect. It was a sort of cultural changes that have taken place over the years. Vechut atzmotehem, take the bones. Vayikberu tachat ha'eshel biyavesha, and to bury them properly in Kfurat Melachim in Yavesh Gilad, v'yetzumu shivat yamim, and then to sit shiva and fast for 7 days. All of this done by the people of Yavesh Gilad. Why? And of all of the cities, why Yavesh Gilad? No idea. Doesn't ring a bell.
It should.
It absolutely should. There are two previous stories about Yavesh Gilad that are coming to fruition here.
The Mishkan?
Nope. Mishkan's nowhere near Yavesh Gilad.
Those are the ones that hid or that objected to David being there?
Mm-mm. Oh. Nope.
Well, we could keep trying.
So, what was Shaul HaMelech's very first act after he was told that he would be king? What was the very first thing Shaul ever did to win over the hearts of the people when they doubted that he would ever amount to anything because he was this nothing of a wimp of a guy who stood tall but who was hiding amongst the baggage when they came to anoint him and he's hiding out there in the right, didn't want the position, he didn't want the authority, he didn't want the responsibility, he's hiding and the people would say to each other and said, this one's going to save us, this nothing of a wimp, doesn't even have a backbone, this is going to be our king. And went to battle. Where did he go to battle and against whom and for what purpose?
Must be near the Gilad, right?
Nope. Wasn't the Plishtim yet. But they're getting closer. Turn back to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. We still have to come back to our Perek because this was all a digression from our primary agenda, which was to look at the issue of Shaul's fear. But turn back to Perek Yud Aleph. Mm-hmm. So Perek Yud is
36.
Perek Yud is the anoint Shaul. There's a public anointment of Shaul. Go back to the end of Perek Yud for a second. A public selection, shevet by shevet, of the person who would be chosen by God. Pasuk Chav, Vayakrev Shmuel et kol shiftei Yisrael Vayilached Shevet Binyamin. They gathered together all the tribes of Israel and through a public selection, lots, if you will, divine decree, the Urim V'Tumim, however it worked, Shevet Binyamin was chosen. Vayakrev et Shevet Binyamin l'mishpachatav v'tilached mishpachat amatri Vayilached Shaul ben Kish. And after all of the selection was done, the chosen one emerged from the Kalfi, from the vote, and he was elected by God. Who was it? Shaul ben Kish. And everybody's about to clap. waiting for Shaul to take his position on the podium. Vayevakshu velo nimtza. Nowhere to be found. Vayishlu od b'Hashem, ava od alam ha'ish. Vayomar Hashem mineu, nechbal ha'kelim. Where God has to say this to Shmuel, you know when you want to find him? Over there behind the baggage, he's hiding. So vayarutzu, they ran, vaykumisham, they picked him up, vaytatzu b'toch ha'am, they stood him up, vaygbah mikol ha'am mishichmo v'ma'alo, and he stood taller than everybody in the city. Vayomu Shmuel ha'am, ha'ra'item ha'shebachar bo Hashem, ki ein kamo b'chol ha'am. Have you seen this? This is one that God has chosen. Nobody taller, nobody better.
How tall was he?
Vayariyu kol ha'am yamru, yachi ha'melech. Long live the king. Fine. They write the laws of the king down in a piece of in a parchment. They seal it up. And then, Pasuk Chavav, Vagam Shaul alach lebeito givata, vayachu imo achayal, shenagal elokim bilibam, uvnev liya'al amru, ma yoshienu zeh, vayivizuhu, v'lo aviyu lo mincha, vayhi kamacharish. And there were the Bnei Belial who doubted Shaul would ever amount to much. They chastised him, they criticized him behind his back, they whispered about him, they spent said Lashon Hara about him. Ma Yoshin, this one's going to save us, this one's hiding, he doesn't have a backbone. And Shaul's response to that was, Vahikim Achamish, he stayed silent, he accepted it, he took it, he did not say anything. Bueno. Then we get to Perek Yudalef. Vayal Nachash Ha'amoni. Nachash Ha'amoni comes. Nachash is the king of Ammon. Vayichan al Yavesh Gilad. And he encamped against the city of Yavesh Gilad. Now Yavesh Gilad is a city in the heart of the Gilad, on the east side of the Yarden, out there in exposed territory, because he's a border city, exposed to the bordering armies of Ammon, Moab, and all the other neighbors in the neighborhood. Vayamru kol anshei Yavesh Gilad el Nachash, the people of Yavesh Gilad said to Nachash, Knot lanu brit v'navdeka. Okay, well, you know what? If you, rather than come and trample upon us and kill us all, if you want, we'll make a brit with you. We'll pay your tribute and your taxes, and we'll be loyal to you, just to avoid the war. Vayomar alayhem Nachash, Hamoni, Nachash said to them, Bezot echrot lachem min kol lachem kol ayin yamin. You want a brit, here's my price. You send me, each one of you, your gouge out your right eye. And that will be your siman avdus. That will be your branding to be my slaves. V'samti echad pal ko Yisrael. V'yimu elav zeknei avesh, heref lanu shivat yamim, v'nishlacham malachim b'chol gvul Yisrael, v'yimen moshi otanu v'yatanu elecha. So give us 7 days to see if somebody will come and save us. And if not, then we'll accept your terms. We learned the story way back when,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Now it's coming. Now it's.
It was horrible then, and it's still horrible.
So what happened? They sent Malachim. They sent these messengers to Givat Shaul, to Israel. The people heard, "Oh, poor Yavesh Gilad," and they started to cry. Poor Yavesh Gilad. Why poor Yavesh Gilad? Why didn't Yavesh Gilad send messengers to Israel? For what purpose? Yavesh Gilad sent messengers to all the borders of Israel, saying, so that they would come and help. And the response was, Vayisu kol am kolam vayivku. The people lifted up their voices and saw in tears and cried. Poor Yavesh Gilad. They're all going to lose their right eye. Nebuch. Terrible. They're all going to lose their right eye. Never. V'ine Shaul ba achare bakar min asadeh. V'yom Shaul malam ki yivku. So he comes, Shaul, and he says, what is everybody crying about? So they told him, the people of Yavesh came and they said that Nachash is attacking them, and the terms of surrender is that they gouge out their right eye. Never. Poor Yavesh Gilad. They're all going to be blind in one eye. Batitzlach ruach Elokim al Shaul. This is the first time it says that the Spirit of God rested upon Shaul. Kishamot atzadim eile vayicharapo ma'od, and he got very angry. Why does he get angry?
No one
at the inaction of the people. Vayikach tzemed bakar So he took a pair of oxen and he cut it up into 12 pieces and he sent a piece to each one of the tribes of Israel. And he said, if you don't follow me into battle, this is what's going to be to your oxen. Meaning, either you follow me into battle or I'm going to do this to you. And he gathers an army together, and by the end of the day, he attacks Yaveshki of Nachash, and he pushes them back, and Yavesh Gilad is saved. That's the people of Yavesh Gilad who hear about the
Zion
of the body of Shaul and his sons, and they take the journey and the trek all night long from Yavesh Gilad to come and give a respectful burial to Shaul HaMelech. Yavesh Gilad we haven't heard about since Perek Yud-Aleph. Now, we're not finished, because that's not the end of the story. Yavesh Gilad, there's a reason why Shaul cuts up the bakar into 12 pieces and sends them to the entire house of Israel and says, if you don't come and save Yavesh Gilad now, this is what's going to happen to you. Because Yavesh Gilad was the same city that the people of Israel had attacked in the story of Pelegesh Begiva, the end of Sefer Shoftim.
Oh,
remember when they were attacking Binyamin because of what they had done to the woman? And the Levi who had taken his wife and cut her up into pieces and sent the pieces to the tribes of Israel in order to encourage them to come to war against Binyamin? Pelegesh Begiva? And in the end, in order to demonstrate their energy and their seriousness in this battle against their brother Binyamin, they took an oath who had not come to participate in the battle. They found Yavesh Gilad and decided to stay neutral. So they went and they attacked and killed everybody in Yavesh Gilad. So there's a history to Yavesh Gilad. Yavesh Gilad stayed neutral to side with Binyamin back in the story of Pelegesh Begiva and was attacked for it. Shaul from Shevet Binyamin, his first act as king is an act of extraordinary courage and strength, spine, if you will, mishichmo v'amal gavon mikol adam, to save the people of Yavesh Gilad. And at the end of the story, when Shaul, after Shaul has finished crumbling, melokomato, the height of Shaul, crumbled to the ground in fear, falls in battle in fear, and who comes to pay him the respect they feel is due? The people of Yavesh Gilad. It's an extraordinary story.
Wow, full circle.
It's a tale that takes us from the end of Sefer Shoftim to the beginning of the story of Shaul to the end of the story of Shaul. Doesn't answer my question, though. Right? Which is the fear of Shaul. And why the emphasis on this fear is there. What is the purpose of what's the message, the takeaway that the text wants us to have from the story of Shaul? On the one hand, there's so much emphasis on the fear factor of Shaul's life, the fact that Sarmei Alav Hashem, that the Spirit of God has left him, the fact that he's afraid of the Plishtim, he's afraid of David, he's afraid, he's paranoid, right? This overwhelming, debilitating fear. And on the other hand, every once in a while we get these snippets of a reminder of the other side of the coin. We get a little bit of a reminder of, oh, you remember there's another side to Shaul. Remember the Shaul from Yavesh Gilad? Yavesh Gilad is going to come and pay the respects to him because of the other side of Shaul's life. So how to balance those two things, we still have to figure out. We'll come back to the Midrashim and final piece of the story, B'zot Hashem, in our next shiur. My question to you is, when are we doing that next year?